Nobody can help us when it comes to practice. When you learn, you have already learned, you have to do it. If you don't do it, you won't get anything out of this. I went to see the teachers when I was a little kid, only 7 years old. I learned meditation using breath with Long Po Li, with breathing in, counting one, though breathing out, counting two. I did it every day, never give up. I study and I do it. I started when I was a kid. It's not difficult then. I breathe a little and then the mind become bright. But then I didn't know what's next. So my mind wandered out and see things. Until one day, I realized that what is it for me to know things outside? I see angels and celestials, but I cannot stay with them. I cannot do anything. It's like watching movies, no use at all. And I'm also scared of ghosts. What if I met ghosts? What would I do? So I try not to go out. Breathing in and out, and it remembers the way that if the mind just follow the light, it will go out. So I wouldn't follow it. I stay with the light and know. And my mind became calm bit by bit and not going out. I keep practicing until it reached the point when the aggregate start to separate it, the body disappeared, only the mind. And then when the mind withdraw and it saw the mind, it saw it clearly. Since I was a kid, but I didn't have the language to describe that I know that that's mind and body. And then it knows, and then it sees. It didn't get lost in thought. The knowing is standing out. This is the power of the meditation and concentration. You get the mind that is awakened. It's calm, but it has mindfulness. It doesn't forget itself, and it doesn't force over control itself to become stiff. Like that person there, this is wrong. You are over controlling, it became stiff. Like this. You can become stiff like this for all days, but there's nothing into it. When I kept practicing for the mind to become a knower and the body disappeared, when the body appeared back, the mind and body is separated automatically, and it's separated all the time. But when I was little, I couldn't describe. I was finding the path, but I couldn't find. I went out to see the teachings of the teachers in the past. They taught to look at the body, to observe the hair, and the hair just disappeared, just the skull. And then when I washed the skull, my neck just disappear. Then only the body and the skin disappear. I washed the bone disappeared. It became just pebbles all on the floor. I keep watching those, and all those pebbles become light. And then it came back to the same old place, that the mind is the knower and there's no body. This is not the path. I felt that this is not the path, because as I kept practicing, it came back to the knower of the mind. I didn't know how to progress further, but to go back and watch the body, it wasn't fun, because I only watched for a little, and then the body just disappeared. It was like a fireworks. For only a moment, everything disappeared. There's nothing. My mind didn't like the body watching. And then one day, I found Lung Pu Dun's Dhamma, that the mind that wander out is the cause of suffering, and the result of the mind wandering out is the suffering, and for the mind to see the mind clearly, it is the path. And the second lesson is that the nature of the mind is the nature of the mind to wander out. The nature of the mind will go out, but when the mind go out and it waver, going after the object, that was the cause. And the result of that wavering is suffering. But if when the mind goes out and it has mindfulness, that is cultivating the path. And the third lesson is about the enlightened one, doesn't have the mind going out, has mindfulness all the time, and that's the end of the practice, the end of the noble truth. All this is a summary of the noble truth. That's what Lung Pu Dun said. This means this is it. That's a misunderstanding. The ending of the noble truth doesn't mean the conclusion of the three lessons. It means that enlightenment, to know the noble truth, is being enlightened. And if knowing the noble truth means that we stop all the life and rebirths. And the first in the noble truth is the suffering. And what is suffering is the body and mind. It is not the pain or heartbroken. That's not suffering. That's not the suffering in noble truth. And that's not the impermanent suffering. Selfless. This is the truth in noble truth, as in the that is really different. This truth is where the mind see through the body and mind, that is actually the suffering itself. Some people see that the suffering arise and fall away. This is one type of one eye enlightenment from the Arahant. And some saw that it's suffering because the mind is being forced, couldn't stay. And some see the nothingness, that the aggregate or the mind, there's nothing to it. And then they put it down. The mind will choose whichever way or whichever type that will enlighten. The mind will choose, depends on what we have collected through all the life. Some people will see the impermanence. For people who have jhanas before, they will see the suffering. Because the mind that is absorbed with jhana is all with bliss and happiness. We all in this world know happiness, which is the worldly happiness, which is a bit rough. It's actually silly, but for people to reach the jhana and absorption, you will see that the worldly happiness is actually dirty. When I teach the monks, I will tell them that they have to try to attain the jhana. Because monks are not happy in their life, they want to eat, they cannot. They want to watch TV, they want to watch soap operas, they couldn't. They can't do anything really. They can't find happiness from listening, from watching, from drinking, from touching. There's nothing for that for monks. The life is actually quite poor. They are hungry. There's no hungry, but they're thirst. They want something else, but always get others. When I became monk at the first time, I usually never have problems with food, but my first time of becoming a monk, I didn't know where to go. I was alone and staying in a place where they keep their dead bodies. And there was no mentor. In the morning, I didn't even know how to wear the robe. And when I went out to get in the morning, the robe just came out. It happened. I was worried because back then I didn't know how to wear robe. I had to wait for the monks from the same temple and ask for help. And then I had to put it so tight, I can't. It was difficult to move. But right now I can move however I want. I've been practicing this for so long. So at that time, I didn't know where to go. I didn't get any food to eat at all. Nobody offered any food to me. I came back to the temple. Every other month, they have lots of food. I just didn't know back then where to go. I thought, oh, today I wouldn't get to eat. But suddenly when I arrived at the front of the temple, my empty bowl can still take the food that other people just gave to me. So in summary, I don't have to walk far. I don't have to carry heavy stuff at all. See, I wasn't hungry, but do I still have thirst? Yes, because I might want other food, but I don't get what I want. But this is better than getting nothing at all. In the life of a monk, there's no happy life. The bed is actually hard. When it's cold, the clothes barely enough. There's nothing to do. In the summer, when it's hot, the monk robe is really, really hot. It's like in sauna. When a monk wants it cooler, they got it hot. But if a monk have jhana absorption and concentration, they will not have craving from that worldly matters. It doesn't have that significance anymore because the jhana's absorption is much higher and much better. But that is not enough because the absorption into jhana is not enough. It's impermanent. Today we have it and tomorrow no. Like if the moral conduct is not good enough, like Prathevathat, have you heard? He is really good. He can fly and he can disguise himself into one somewhere else. He can turn himself into a kid or turn himself into a scary man or turn into a kid with snakes around his neck. But in the end, he did a lot of bad things, evil things. He couldn't do anything. That jhana has all gone away. He wanted to come to see the Buddha, he couldn't. He has to ask someone to carry him. And then the monks tell the Buddha that Thevathat is here now. He's about to reach the city now. And the Buddha say, he will not see me. Up until Thevathat reached in front of the temple, the Buddha say, his bad deeds is too great, he wouldn't see me. And then when Thevathat came in front and found a pond, he felt like he's dirty. He had to wash himself and clean himself. So as soon as his helper put him down on the floor, and he touched the floor and he was sunken into the floor, he didn't meet. Even though he used to have lots of powers and could do every magical thing, but because of the bad deeds, all this meditation and concentration, we have to use it as a base for wisdom cultivation to see the truth that everything is suffering. And when we see the truth enough, the mind will renunciate, the mind will get tired of those, and it will put down everything and it will be liberated. And when the mind is liberated, it will reach a different type of happiness. It's a type of happiness that almost kills you. When you first understand or attain Dhamma and enlightenment, that happiness is overwhelming. All the teachers say the same thing. All the enlightened ones say the same things. The happiness is like you are dying. In the textbook, it say that for the lay people, if they became arahant, then they would die that day. Why? If you're a monk, you wouldn't die when you are enlightened. That's because you are used to that type of happiness. But it's like you know some happiness before, unlike lay people. Practice, keep practicing. Do like what I taught yesterday and today. That's body. Keep feeling the body when it's moving. When you're breathing, feel it. Standing, sitting, moving, or still, know it. When the mind go out and encounter all the objects, and then it become good, bad, greed, and scattered, keep noticing, keep knowing. Know that with the ordinary mind. But normally our mind is not ordinary. The Buddha say the ordinary mind, simple mind, is actually bright but tarnished because of the refinements that came by. By nature, on its own, the mind is actually bright and clear, but refinements and the mind wander out all the time to thoughts, and it run away all the time. It had defilements, therefore it's tarnished. There's no clarity. So first, we have to train the mind to have that clarity and know itself, feel itself. And then when we keep practicing until it reaches the clarity, we'll find out that when we were young and when defilement is not strong, and we know ourselves is exactly the same thing, it's not a mystery. We practice the mind until it became the same old mind before the defilement came, and the method is to pick a meditation object, be it Buddha or breathing. Keep practicing. Don't hope for that it will be good, will be happy. And when the mind ran away, know it. When the mind went to thoughts, know it. When it go to nothingness, just know it. Just keep knowing. Have one meditation object and know the mind and the right type of concentration will arise. The clarity mind, the clear mind, looks good, but it is not pure. Clarity is bright and clear, but it's not pure. Clarity and purity is different. By nature, on its own, the mind is clear but tarnished by defilement. But even though it's clear, it has the hidden defilement. It's just clear, it's not pure. Therefore, even the knowing mind, the knower, Luang Tak Bua called avichā or ignorant mind, ignorant. But for us, it's not even reaching that ignorant mind. We didn't see it. We only see the grief. We will see that the mind is ignorant when we reach the non-returner level. So at that level, the mind would not go out and it won't become greedy. It has a very, very fine level of greed, of the absorption in jhana or calm. Is a really fine, fine level of grief. But the non-returner will not crave for any worldly matters. He already can put away all those. But there is liking of the happiness and calm of the concentration. The non-returner mind is really clear, but it's not fully pure. The non-returner doesn't have to take care of the knower and the mind. Once in a while, it will get a little bit unclear. It might reach at the level that it felt like everything is permanent because the mind hardly changed. If the non-returner doesn't have the teacher, then it's hard to get by. Luang Pu Dun taught me, when you see Luang Pu Dun, my teacher, you shouldn't speak, don't ask. If you ask, you won't get anything, he will not teach. But if you sit on your own and keep practicing, like I was sitting with Luang Pu Dun one day, and I was watching my mind, and he would say, he said that most practitioners became a big ghost, and that's it. He said that even the famous and well-known Dhamma teachers became the big ghost. I listened, and then I had to ask the other monk, and the other monk, what is the big ghost? And the other monk say that this big ghost is the non-returner. Luang Pu Dun explained later when I met him about this, that if you find the knower, destroy, kill the knower. So one day, and if you destroy that knower, you will reach the purity. But he didn't tell how we destroy or kill it. So students like us will have to learn and experiment ourselves. That's why the old students, when they really experiment, they will become a really good ones. Unlike the students these days, the teacher have to say everything. We don't have to wait until we get home. Even when I finish teaching, this place become a market. When I teach the monk, I look at you with sadness because you all don't pay attention to the practice. The practice has to be done all the time. It's not like when you listen to Dhamma, then you try to keep it. But when I stop, everything is all gone. You're all scattered and not pay attention to the mind. This is so far from the enlightenment. If you go to the old teachers in the old day, they will not take you as a student. You need patience, you need to keep at it, keep diligence, not being hard work at the asking or thinking, because the thoughts is the blocker. Thoughts will block you from seeing the truth. The more you think, you won't see the body and mind, the thoughts will block. The more you think, the more you ask, And the more you ask, you keep that wonder. It's actually a vicious cycle. Your curiosity is a vicious cycle. I was really far away from my teacher. I could only see my teacher once a month, 3 or 4 months for long weekends. Then I get to see Long Pu Du, Long Pu The. But during when I didn't see those teachers, I just know that that the curiosity arise, it stay for a while and it falls away, just like any other phenomena. Therefore, when the curiosity arises, it doesn't have any significance. See that it just arises, stay and fall away. It cannot, you cannot control it. This is a practitioner. The practitioner has to keep fighting, not asking, not having to ask all the time. And those people who ask all the time never get advancement at all. Kunnae, Prajan A, they practice well, but they don't ask me. They stay with me for so long. Kunnae stay with me for so long, for 10 years. Prajan Ha has been with me for 18 years. They didn't ask, they never asked. They kept observing, they're observing what I did. Observe what I did. I don't get lost in thought. I have mindfulness. When I was still a layman, I was angry. When that angry arises, I didn't try to control or stop it. Just know it. And then they take notice that, oh, it's just knowing, not trying to fix anything. These people is the strong one and is the one that will move on. But for people who keep on asking, and when I didn't call you to ask questions, then you kept complaining behind the back that maybe I only call the one I know. No, I only call by the numbers. I don't see the face. Because if I see the face, I won't even call some. Because some people just keep talking nonstop. It's too long waste of time. So that is really the fair. It's actually up to who will get it. So I hope there's nobody asking questions today. If you have curiosity, just know it. Can you do it? Do you have that bravery? If you're coward, you're just so-so. Practice. Keep at it. At first, we see the rough phenomena first, and then the mindfulness and wisdom become deeper, deeper. We will see the finer and finer phenomena. Like at first, we saw greed, anger, and delusion. Which one is the easiest to see? Greed, anger, delusion. Which one is the roughest one? Anger. Make it your end. Now greed. Who think delusion? Oh, the one who picked delusion is really deluded. You misunderstood. Delusion happens all the time. Because when it's angry or when it's greed, every time there's defilement, it has delusion with it all the time. But the one that is rough, that we could see easiest, is anger. Anger is easiest to see. Greed is hard to see. Especially the fine one is as if there's nothing. It looks like you're a good person. There's no greed. The rough one is anger. So some people say, when asked me, I'm so bad, I only have anger. I would say sadhu, because it's actually good that you have lots of anger, because it's easier to put down. Why? Do we want to have anger? Do you see that when you have anger, the mind is not happy? When there's anger, there's always pain in the mind. When there's anger, there are many phenomena happening, coming together. We're deluded first and then we become angry. And there are others as well. For example, the feelings come with all the mind. The mind with anger is actually suffering. That's a feeling. It's sadness. We're talking about the feelings in the mind. If there's happiness in the mind, we call it somanat. And if there's suffering in the mind, that's called tomanat. And there's neutral. And there's body and mind that in Pali is different. The body suffering and the mind suffering is actually have a different word. But you all don't have to understand Pali. When the mind has suffering, we just know it. Look well, every time there's anger, there's unhappiness in the mind all the time. We don't like unhappiness and suffering, right? That's why it's easier to put down anger, because we don't want it. But for greed and craving, it doesn't always come with pain. Sometimes it came with happiness. It's either happy or sometimes it's just neutral with it. So when the mind is happy, is it wholesome or unwholesome? Not sure yet. We have to see well. Because the happiness comes with the wholesome mind and unwholesome mind as well. Like for when there's craving, there can be happiness and unhappiness. But when there's suffering or anger, the craving will go away. The craving doesn't have a bad effect as anger. But craving is not as easy to put down. Like for sometimes when we like someone, the craving is harder to see that it's bad and it's not good for us. That's why it's harder to put down. But for anger, it's easier to put down because it's easier to see the suffering. When we see the suffering coming with it, then it's easy to give up. Like when craving happens, it doesn't really cause any harm. Like you need Viagra for the craving for the old people because you don't see that the craving is harmful. You actually thought that this craving bring happiness, therefore it's harder to put away. Things that we see that is harmful, it's easier to put away. So the Buddha say anger is a defilement, type of defilement that has more harm than others. Craving has less harm, but harder to put away. Delusion has the most harm, but also the hardest to put away because we don't see. This is like the big boss. It's harder to see, it's harder to put away. It's actually the worst of them all. It's avijja or ignorance is actually the same thing as the wrong understanding or micchatiti. When we are practicing to cultivating the mind. What we will attain is the right understanding. What disappeared is the wrong understanding. So the wrong understanding has to be put away with deep wisdom. Practice little by little. Anyone here has a lot of anger? Raise your hand. See that lots of you. But if you have angry all the time, it's easier to go to hell. And for animals actually is a level that is lower than hell, because it's lots of delusion. For the creatures in hell, it didn't have a chance to do any bad things, because it's actually worse. You're busy taking the results of your wrongdoing, but for animals, it's full of delusion. It's really risky. So who of you here is a slave to your cat? So who's a slave to your dogs? Oh, so people who keep dogs are more than cats. There is association of the slave of cat. We love cats. And when we die, we love it too much. We might become a cat as well. The mind is important. The mind goes where you're used to. It runs to where you're used to. If the mind is into your animals or your pet too much, it can be scary. But if the mind has the charity and kindness, loving kindness toward the pet, it's different. Loving kindness is not about owning, craving, or greed. Is about owning it. We like a woman, we love the person. If we have that greed, we want to own it. But for loving kindness, like I have loving kindness to you all, that's why I'm teaching you all. But I don't feel like that you are my student. I don't feel that way. I'm not worried about you. You want to go anywhere else. I only have pity if you want to find a study somewhere else. I only feel that it's normal. This is loving kindness. I don't want to own anything. Loving kindness and lust is different. Loving kindness is good. Pure loving kindness doesn't want to own. Parents has loving kindness for their kids, but then there is the greed coming in. And sometimes we have that kindness, want the kids to be happy. At the end, it became my kid. There's the kindness, wanting the kids to be good. Don't be friend with bad people, or don't cross the road. Don't go out in the rain. We're worried. We don't want the kids to be unhappy. Loving kindness can have the greed easily. Karuna is the kindness or the well wish that don't want other people to have bad. It can have anger coming over. Like if we don't want the kids to go out and play in the rain, and when they play anywhere, we become angry. So anyone who have kids here and get angry with kids, if you say you never angry with your kids, that means you don't really know how to watch. Have you ever been annoyed by your children when it cry at night? Are you happy? The mind then, oh, my kid is crying. Are you worried? What's wrong with the baby? So anyone saying that you never get angry with your kid, Look at it again, but you don't have to tell your kid. Anyone has more than one kid? Do you love your kids the same way? Different kids, you don't love them the same way. Do you know that you actually don't love them the same, and you're not worried about them the same way? So the good kid, you're not too worried about them. But the troubled one, you're more worried. So try to know yourself. Measure yourself between wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. Like when you tell your kid, don't go and play in the street, and then the kid go anyway, you become angry. Keep knowing. There's one guy coming with his girlfriend. I asked him, so do you have a wife? You want to become a monk? So if you have a wife, I plan not to take him as a monk. And he just say honestly, yes, I have a wife, but not officially. Just now then, when you were laughing, was your mind wholesome or unwholesome? Wholesome or unwholesome? You listening to Dhamma, the mind is wholesome or unwholesome? Did it lack of mindfulness? It lack of mindfulness because delusion was there. The happiness when delusion is at present, there must be craving. So the greed is in there. So you see the reality like this. Can we do it? Go and try and observe when it has greed, when it has anger, when it has delusion. Know it, but don't hate it. Anyone can see that you have clinging to your own opinions and thoughts. We have like one block of opinions and nobody can actually touch it. When you touch that, when people touch it, it actually affects our ego. So people who has clinging to that opinions, the suffering can come all the time. People who have clinging to their own thoughts and opinions, most people don't like this type of people. One day when you see that clinging, the self within, you will see that it's the ugliest. Can you see this? Do you see that it's pretty or ugly? If you see that it's ugly, you should keep seeing. Learn about yourself, and then you will know deeper and deeper. At first you will see rough, and later you see finer level. Anger is the roughest, but then it has different level of it. When I started practicing, I saw anger as well, because I'm the angry type. I have tendency to be angry. But these people who have tendency to get angry, they also have the tendency to have deeper wisdom as well. See, the people with anger has lots of things to comfort yourself. When I first practiced, you have to be really angry, then you see it. But eventually, only a little bit of annoyance you will see it. Like one day, I sat in a room, and I opened the door to see the light outside, and it's really bright. I saw only slight annoyance in the mind. Anyone here is annoyed by the light, sunlight? Anyone is annoyed by the wind that blows? Some people like the sound of the wave of the ocean. If you go and sleep by the ocean and you can hear the wave all night, that's actually annoyance there. The small annoyance is a small anger. The bigger one is easier to see. But the that the strong anger come from the small one first. It's like the flame, it came from the small one first, and then it became the fire that consumed everything. If our mindfulness is fast, we can see slight annoyance and then it didn't have the chance to grow and develop itself. The more we practice, the mind will become easier. So the suffering that afflicts the mind will become less until you reach the non-return level. There's only fine with defilements there. So fine that it's as if that is the end of the road. Just keep practicing bit by bit until the point when you see the knower, you see the suffering. You truly understand the suffering, then you can destroy the avijja.